a hurry and waste of life. I wish to live deliberately, to confront only the essential facts of life. I do not wish to live what is not life. Living is so dear.
Nor do I wish to practice resignation unless it is quite necessary.
I wish to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life.
I want to get a broad swath to drive life into a corner and reduce it to its lowest terms.
If it proves to be me, then to get the whole and genuine meanness of it, and publish its meanings to the world. Or if it is sublime, to know it by experience and be able to give a true account of it. It is a new year, and 354 more days stretch out before us in 2020. There's a new calendar. New terms in schools and colleges, a new fiscal year for many businesses. It's time for New Year's resolutions for those who make them once again. There's something in the turning of a new year that does call us to think about fresh starts and clean slates and beginning again. Many Americans actually make a list of resolutions mentally or physically, and many more give at least a passing thought to what they'd like to do differently this year. What they'd like to accomplish. We may decide to set one specific goal or resolve to make changes in many areas. We probably have at least vague thoughts about what this year should hold or could hold for us. Many of us make resolutions about our health. Roughly 3/4 of resolutions made in this country have to do with eating healthier food. About 2/3 are to exercise more, and over half are to lose weight. I was intrigued. Vermont and New Hampshire put exercise more. Massachusetts and New York put eating healthier first. Don't know why. I can relate to all of these sorts of resolutions. As the holidays draw to a close and that flow of endless desserts dwindles down, I sometimes think that if I were to lift a weight with one arm every time I pick up a cookie with another arm, perhaps I would actually lose weight over the holidays, or at least gain a little bit of muscle. Around 1/3 of the resolutions that we make are to manage money better, and 1/4 are to learn a new skill in the new year. There's noticeable resolutions about this sort of things than the ones having to do with health, but they're still not insignificant. We want to explore a new hobby, or learn a new language, volunteer with some organization, or take a class. A 1/10 or so of all of our resolutions are to contact family members more regularly. There are myriads of possibilities, so many ways that we could improve our lives and become healthier or more productive or find better balance. And there's real merit to this. It is a wise thing to take stock of our lives from time to time and evaluate how we spend our energy and resources, to assess where we'd like to be headed and create a plan to get there. Organizations work in periodic self-evaluation, which include setting priorities and establishing goals. Our church does this every year as part of the budget process, which will begin in the next month or two. Individuals often do this sort of assessment at landmark dates, like New Year's or a significant birthday or some other major event. Change can be initiated at any point, of course, often like forces us to evaluate and deliberate and make changes, whether it's New Year's or not. Several things strike me about all these resolutions, though. The first is the failure rate. It's estimated that at least half of the resolutions made on January 1st have fallen by the wayside by mid-February. Some studies show a failure rate as high as 80%. So a scant 6 or 7 weeks into the new year, most of this good resolve has come to nothing and we're back to life just as it was in the old year. It's pretty discouraging. Perhaps change isn't all that easy after all, even with good intentions and solid rationale. The second thing I notice is closely related. It's the focus on achieving a precise goal out there rather than attending to the process. Attaining a goal is often an all or nothing thing. You reach the top of the mountain, whatever your mountain is, or you fell short, which may mean you fail utterly. But what if the focus were on loving the path and making progress and noticing things along the way, appreciating what was accomplished as you go along? What if the goal were simply to start the journey itself and keep going at whatever pace it unfolds? For me as a Unitarian Universalist, the next thing I notice has to do with our fourth principle, that free and responsible search for truth and meaning. It is intriguing that the most commonly made resolutions all have to do with improving health. Eating better, exercising more, losing weight, drinking less. The ones like time with family, or volunteering, or reading more, or exploring something that might feed our souls, those are much less common. What if the emphasis for this year was on bringing more meaning to our lives, promoting that search for truth, paying more attention to nourishing our souls and being of service to the world? What might that kind of resolutions look like? What might it mean to incorporate that search for truth and meaning into the new year, even to make that search a priority? And lastly, I'm struck by what often seems like an assumption that if we could only change this one thing, accomplish this one goal, then everything would be better. If I lose this weight or manage my money better, exercise more, or get a different job, then life will be good. The implication, of course, is that now life is insufficient. And there's some almost magical thinking that changing these few things, or even just this one thing, would somehow make life perfect and whole in a way that it just isn't now. That outlook can be so forward-looking that it completely ignores the gifts of the present. We'll examine each of these in turn: a high failure rate, the focus on the goal rather than the journey, the question of finding meaning, and that whole issue of magical thinking. This is how we'll change everything. The failure rate, first of all. There are all sorts of opinions about how to actually make a substantial change in life, how to not fall into that large category who tried and failed. One of the first things to do is to remember that making a change takes time. Not 2 days, not 2 weeks, often several months. Often setting one large, vague goal may be not as effective as starting with smaller changes. If the goal is to eat healthier or lose weight, for example, you might start by getting rid of all those cookies that you usually grab for snacks. If the goal is to read more, you might form a book club with others who have that same goal. But don't take on too much all at once. Figure out what's most important to you and work on that. Often trying to address several different areas all at once is overwhelming and unproductive. Be realistic about what change involves. Setting a new habit takes a long time and it takes attention day after day. Losing weight, leaving a marriage, changing jobs, learning karate. Remember that whether you're doing any of those things, what you take with you is yourself still. You're still part of the equation. And no matter what you change, who you are now will still go with you. That change will not bring about any magical perfection. And finally, be gentle with yourself. Change is often uneven, and falling short doesn't mean you're a complete failure. You may have learned something very valuable through your mistakes. I think it was Tim that mentioned earlier this morning Thomas Edison saying he'd made 1,000 mistakes, finding things that didn't work along the way, and that all of those were useful, as well as finding a solution. Remember, it's possible to begin again, to give another try, even to accept the progress that you've made with gratitude, rather than blame because you haven't made more. The second thing to explore is the tendency to focus on the goal rather than the journey. One of the wonderful things about life is how often things don't unfold the way you planned or expected. Sometimes things go badly, certainly, but often surprises show up. I think of the number of discoveries that have happened entirely by accident. One of my grandsons pointed out recently that penicillin was discovered when a scientist named Alexander Fleming inadvertently left behind some unplanned petri dishes when he went away from his lab for several days. He had been investigating the bacteria that causes staph infection. That was the focus of his research, and the staph germs were all over those petri dishes. But when he returned, some of the dirty dishes were clean. And after some exploration, he discovered a mold that turned out to be penicillin, which had devoured the staphylococcus bacteria. He had made a mistake. He'd gone away without washing his dishes. And the result of discovery has saved millions of lives, probably including the lives of some of us in this room. Mistakes and diversions are inevitable. If we never try anything, we'll never make a mistake. But what a sad life that would be. Sometimes those mistakes result in new discoveries. Sometimes only we'll have to start all over, retrace our steps, even undo a real mess. But often it's our mistakes that lead us to new places and different vantage points, unexpected and even welcome surprises. Insisting on one definition of success means that we'll probably miss out on a lot. But the journey may lead us to something unexpected, and the path may change. My friend Jacob tells a wonderful story about joining a gym one January a few years ago. He wasn't particularly out of shape, but it seemed like a good thing to do. He had a new office partner who really wanted him to join him. Jacob decided it would be social, and he probably spent far too much time sitting for his own good anyhow. So he paid for a 3-month membership with his co-worker, so they would keep each other going. They'd go over each day after work, and they'd lift some weights, use some cardio machines, and even tried an exercise class or two. Jacob hated all of it, with a passion. His co-worker turned out to love the gym, so Jacob would grit his teeth and go to be supportive. But a few months into it, on a day when his frustration and dislike were especially obvious, and his co-worker was being especially enthusiastic about the joys of weightlifting, one of the trainers asked Jacob if he'd like to try racquetball. He'd never heard of racquetball. He said he'd be willing to try it, mostly to get away from his co-worker, and to his amazement, he loved it. He was terrible at it at first, and it wasn't at all what he'd signed up for, as his co-worker reminded him. When he told me about the experience, the friendship with the co-worker had ended, but Jacob was still playing racquetball, not very well, but with great enthusiasm. He was willing to start something new to begin with, and then willing to shift in a different direction when he discovered something he'd never known about at all. He wasn't overly concerned about being good at it, although he got slightly better over time, and he wasn't determined to keep to his original goal no matter what. He did remain open to possibilities. Often, we humans hold back for fear of not keeping to our original plan or making mistakes or being imperfect. It's sometimes difficult for us competent adults, perhaps especially for us competent new adults, to try something that we know we may be really bad at, we may flounder at. And that fear can keep us from exploring something that we might love, even if we're never really good at it. There's Rebecca, who began cello lessons as a gift to herself on her 50th birthday. She says it took over 2 years before she even told anyone she was taking lessons. She enjoyed playing, and she saw regular progress in her skills. But some of her friends played professionally, and she felt terribly inadequate. Until one of her friends confided in her how much she, as a professional musician, missed playing just for the love of playing, rather than to prepare for performances. And Rebecca remembered that her reason for beginning lessons was just for her own enjoyment. Perfection was not a requirement. The journey itself was the point of her activities, and it was important for her to remember that. Rebecca's cello lessons take me to that third point, that search for truth and meaning. Her learning how to make music for herself was tremendously meaningful for her. It fed her soul and brought her joy. and as she gained confidence, she even brought music to others at times. Her 50th birthday provided a good reason to take such a risk, and the beginning of a new year can offer such an opportunity to each of us. Most of us, I know, are involved in work that gives meaning to our lives, professionally or as volunteers. Where will that ongoing search for meaning take you this year? 2020 promises to be a challenging year in many ways. Tremendously important elections, difficult political and environmental situations around our globe that could easily impact each of our lives. Issues right here in our own community that are complicated and controversial. Challenges in our personal lives that we may or may not have any hint of as the year begins. The search for truth often seems to be overshadowed by the need to be right, or the need to gain prestige, or to push an agenda based on our personal opinion, rather than paying any heed to science or experience or expertise. And finding meaning sometimes takes a backseat to financial gain, or living up to some hypothetical ideal, or finding power or prestige. It is perhaps a difficult time to be a searcher, one who admits not knowing. And yet our own religious principles call us to a responsible search for truth and meaning. I wonder how that will play out for us in Unitarian Universalists this year. Meaning is a rather nebulous term as a goal. It's highly individual and very subjective. What has meaning for me may seem absolutely frivolous to you. And what you find deeply meaningful may seem just plain silly to me. So how can we be supportive of one another in our respective searches? What does a search for meaning look like anyway? Reverend Frederick Muir, in an essay on this principle, suggests that one important component of the search for meaning is dissatisfaction. It's being willing to notice the things in the world around you that you would love to see be different, and being so dissatisfied with them that you can't help doing something about it. Just as importantly, it's being willing to look at yourself and identify the areas in your own life with which you are dissatisfied, the areas where you would really like to see a change. He says, arriving at the realization that everything you've always wanted isn't enough, recognizing dissatisfaction can be a starting point for religious searching. It's not an easy thing to confront this dissatisfaction, but beginning this journey, this search for truth and meaning, is a bold show of courage, a sacred and holy act that may know no end. Psychologist Carl Jung suggests that the search itself is often the answer. The serious problems in life are never fully solved, Jung said. If ever that should appear to be so, it is surely a sign that something has been lost. The meaning and purpose of a problem seems to be not just in its solution, but in our working at it incessantly. The search is ongoing. Each answer can open up a new question and reveal new possibilities to consider. I had a Old Testament professor when I was in seminary, a wonderful Catholic nun about this fall. We used to say that any answer that doesn't bring a new question is not a good answer. We'll need to be willing to start off knowing that we may be headed in the wrong direction. Again, we can be almost certain that there will be unexpected discoveries and diversions. We can be certain that we'll make mistakes if we're taking any risks at all. And our path may shift entirely as we proceed. We will make mistakes sometimes. We'll be in error. And we may need to go forward even though we have only part of the information that we need. But to not do so is to stagnate. And so we continue to search. The beginning of the new year is a good time to begin a particular search. What new skill? What different experience? What fresh perspective? Where and what will you explore this year? And finally, we'll search most effectively. If we remind ourselves regularly that the search will not suddenly reveal a perfect life. We won't find one answer that will make everything flawless for the rest of time. There's rarely just one path. In every path, every question, every search may turn up unexpected delights and challenges. A few searches may lead to mastery of one sort or another, but probably none will lead to perfection. Mistakes and false starts and lessons learned the hard way, all are inevitable and all are valuable. And despite all of this, life can be good, will be good, is already good along the way. No outside discovery or new accomplishment will suddenly make us flawless. We are already complete with our flaws and falterings. Perfection, whatever that is not required. Try being willing to be lousy at something this year, at least initially. In a class in seminary, we were asked to consider four questions, which I'll share with you now. I invite you to close your eyes, if you will, and let yourself settle down. And let your answers to these questions just float up into your awareness without judging. The first question is, what's something you really enjoy doing that you're really pretty good at? And the second, what's something you don't enjoy at all and are really bad at? Maybe something you dislike so much you've never even tried and never want to. And the third, what's something you do quite well, but really don't like doing? And the fourth, what's something that you truly enjoy but are not very good at? Maybe something you love doing but are just plain bad at. That last one, the thing you really enjoy but don't do well, that may be your challenge for this year. If you truly enjoy it, don't let the fact that you're not good at it stop you from enjoying it. You may get better at it, you may not. But that thing which you love, which you struggle with, may be the thing which really feeds your soul. It is all right not to be good at everything, at least not initially. And that thing that you love enough to do despite your lack of mastery may well be the thing that will really feed your soul and help bring you. For this year, be realistic about what you can change. Take small steps to help you along rather than trying to throw an entire mountain at once. Be gentle with yourself. Remember to pay attention to the journey as well as the goal. Perhaps you might even risk setting out a journey without a specific goal or without a tightly defined definition of what success might mean. Pay attention to what feeds your soul as well as your body. Listen to where your search leads you, and expect diversions and discoveries, expect mistakes and imperfections. As we heard in our time for all ages, often it's the imperfections that become the source for real creativity and beauty. In this game of discovery and delight, for all of us. Take a few minutes to contemplate and then have a response time.